This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning. It's Thursday, which means a burning platform with Justice Malala. It means lots of fun and games. It means the news. It means the money with Anthea. Oh, it's going to be a busy day. Yes. And we've got a couple of young scientists popping by a little bit later on, which is always good.
Oh.
Mostly because I love that stuff. And because even if the Department of Basic Education want to scrap all the hard subjects, they're still the ones that produce the most interesting people. Yeah. So, let me introduce you to the cast and crew. Immediately to my left, Mabale Moloi, the queen of the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Woo!
Good morning.
Woo!
Just to her left, Sia Sangweni, who is the executive producer of the show.
Bonsoir.
No.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Oui.
What is bonsoir?
Bonsoir is good evening.
Oh.
Je m'appelle Sia.
Okay, very good. Are you going to do the whole show in French?
Hey.
That'd be exciting.
Plus petit.
No, it's either plus or petit.
Isn't plus petit tiny?
Yeah, it means very small.
Yeah, plus petit.
Yeah, but either you can go plu, which means all of it as much as possible, or petit, which means little.
Afrique du Sud.
Sound like you've got a mouthful of... We are at the...
I hear a mouthful of buffalo bark, but I hear me poo.
I thought I got it down. You even sound like you have a little bubble in the back of your throat.
All right.
Oui.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda... what's the whole thing, Magia Yia Romberg? How does it go? What's the whole surname?
Sure, let's just stick to Romberg, guys. It's so long, it could maybe take the whole morning here.
Yeah,
so.
It's true. You got like a double barrel going on there.
I do, so Romberg.
That's right, very fancy. Did they read out your whole surname when you were at school? Like on the microphone?
No, they actually didn't.
Called you to the office, did they just go...
Amanda Romberg, please report to the office, please.
No, but when I did get my matric jacket, they were like, can you please choose which name you would actually like?
Really?
Out of all of them. And I was like, no, Amanda's cool.
Yeah, Amanda will work. All right, and then Gord Laws will pop in and join us for the last time this week. And we've decided to institute some kind of he'll pop in every now and then situation. Ben, of course, is away. He is away with his family in the Transkei somewhere. It looks beautiful. He sent us pictures yesterday.
Oh, goodness.
He said it's the most beautiful part of South Africa he's ever seen.
Yeah, just describe those pictures because I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
No, neither have I.
There's this place called the Hole in the Wall. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, never been, never seen pictures.
And Ben was climbing up high mountains and with his drone taking the most amazing pictures. So I'm sure he's going to come back with incredible footage. But it looks like he's having a great time there. Just beautiful, beautiful place. And it's warm. He's walking around in a vest. While we're all freezing ourselves to death. So there's that hole in the wall. There's all this unspoiled, magnificent scenery. There's like a river that empties out into the sea. It really does look amazing. And he was on this headland, this piece of land that juts out into the sea. It just looks beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So that's where Ben is. And he'll be back next week to rejoin us. And hopefully he will have become less grumpy. In the interceding time, don't you think? That would be nice.
You know, there's this ongoing battle between you and Ben on who's the grumpiest.
Who's the oldest?
Okay, but who's the most cynical?
All right, but have I been grumpy in the last couple of weeks? I don't think so.
Yes.
Have I? When was I grumpy? Name the time I was last grumpy.
Well, bar the phone situation.
Oh, but that's the technology that keeps letting me down. Come on,
he says with a smile on his face.
Oh, I sent this email. I sent such an angry email yesterday to sort out some stuff that's been bothering me around the studio. I always have to have a tantrum to get stuff done in that respect.
And I get how that's even frustrating.
Well, look, most of you work around me, right? I don't really climb in and like call urgent meetings and start shitting people out or any of that stuff. It's not my way of doing things.
Yeah.
And even though I shout and scream a lot on the show, a lot of that is really just because I want the audience to feel how I'm feeling. And
that's not how you operate.
I'm hamming it up. I mean, I don't really behave like that all the time. I'd be the world's worst brat and an even worse manager. And I don't consider myself to be totally in control of my emotions all the time. But I think mostly I'm pretty good at keeping a lid on behaving like an idiot most of the time. And when I do it on the show, it's usually just because it's entertaining. Anyway, so I sent this email off yesterday, and I actually felt bad afterwards because I thought I really don't want any enemies. I don't like the idea of people sitting there and going, "Oh, that dick." It used to make me happy to get attention. You know, when I started off in radio, I'd start off and any attention was good, was attention. I mean, you remember like the first season of Idols, I was a complete ignoramus. And I was trying really, really hard to be as mean as possible. And I was just so awful that if I had not known me and I'd seen me on that TV show for the first time, I would have thought, this is the most horrible person in South Africa. He's worse than those serial killers.
Oh.
I was a horrible person. And there's still people who never saw me since then and think that I'm that guy. And, you know, we grow up. Everybody gets better, hopefully, with time. And you start to realize that you're not the most important part of the puzzle. Anyway, somewhere along that journey, I decided that it wasn't worth being a total dick all the time. And hopefully, I'm getting closer and closer to being integrated. We're all trying to do that, right? That's where we hope to get before we're old and dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We hope to get to a point where you can show off the various aspects of your personality, but you have an idea of who you are. And that who is someone who's fairly consistent across day and night and weekend and weekday and work and home and all of those things. You try to be the same kind of person with everybody because then you don't have to remember two versions of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when does grumpy old man syndrome kick in then? Because you're always comparing old men and old women, and you said the men are by far the worst.
They are, because because when men reach that point where they think they know themselves, they almost they relapse into like childishness, because then they expect everyone around them to just accept that.
Mm.
And there's always room for improvement, right? But it seems to me that men, not all men, obviously, a lot of men, they calcify in old age. Like their bad habits and their bad routines and their bad attitude seems to solidify. And with older women, they become wiser and gentler and more thoughtful. And I perhaps I've just got the wrong idea, because that's how I've experienced it. And I don't have old people in my life. I've mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have much of a connection to grannies and grandpas. Mine all died when I was young. But I do think like old women also age with a bit of grace. Most old women, not all.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to always put that caveat in. Otherwise people think, oh, you mean all of them? I know some disgusting old ladies. Yeah, of course.
Because that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly. We all know someone like that. But I'm saying generally, like men become so full of themselves. Oh, Jonathan Witt says on WeChat or on WhatsApp this morning, you're still a dick, don't ever change.
Oh, okay.
And then morning team, listening on the plane, waiting to take off from Durban, or to Durban, two open seats next to me. Winning, Clint from the Val. Very nice. That is the best feeling. Isn't it nice? It's like you've just been sent something cool by the universe. It's like you could do with this, here two empty seats for you.
Oh, wait, but you see... Oh. Clint, I don't want to like dishearten you, but you still haven't taken off. And there's always a chain and that chance.
That last minute. Oh. And then someone comes waddling down the aisle and you're like, no.
Yeah.
Now, Clint, please don't use that as an excuse to take your shoes off on the plane, as we were discussing yesterday.
Because I'm always ready to stretch by that point. You go like, okay, yep, and I'm going to lean over. And
you
gonna,
remember Rich Mulholland told us a while ago that he doesn't fly business class. He always flies economy.
Yes.
And even if he can afford business class, he prefers to fly economy. I wanted to know the other day, and nobody seems to be able to give me this answer. Maybe someone very smart in our audience will. What is the comparison in price between a business class ticket, and I'm not talking domestic, I'm talking international, to buy one business class ticket or to buy two economy class tickets? Because if you could buy two economy class tickets, maybe it's cheaper, and then you effectively get double the space. I mean, I don't care for the meals or any of that stuff. You know what I mean?
What do you mean double the space, though?
You take a risk in the sense that not all of the economy class armrests can fully like get out of the way. Yeah. Or they can get out of the way just enough, but not enough.
Or you're in that very back row where you can't actually put your seat down further than an inch. Not that you should even be doing that in economy on a short trip. Anyway, the point is, can you get two economy class tickets and then you can make sure no one's sitting next to you?
I don't know what and it is now.
That, yeah, so those are both your seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then just now someone comes with some sort of fuckery where you actually get like, that seat is needed and you have to, seat's down there.
Then you show them the receipt and you're like, I paid for both of these.
But there was a video clip of somebody.
I have a friend and she's very small.
she's in the bathroom. There was a video clip of someone who bought an extra seat because they had a bunch of their kids with them. So they bought like one more seat than the amount of people in the family. So mom, dad, three kids, like six seats, whatever.
And they took
it from
And
the airline them. Was like, no, you know, it's needed. You're not using it. He's like, but I bought it. It's mine. It's for putting the baby bag on and for lying the toddler down.
Oh, I would Dr. David Dow the situation.
Yeah.
And I would sue the hell out of
them. No, I actually, I'm okay with that. I respect that. Like, the more distance you can put between me and your child on the flight, I appreciate that. If you buy one extra seat so that there's like a space between me and your crying child, thank you, actually.
There was a flight I was on last year, and it was one of those where like you get on the plane and you're already at the end of your tether because now you've flown from South Africa to Dubai and you've been stuck in Dubai airport for 5 hours and then you got to get on the plane. And they do that thing where they board you in stages. So you've been like watching more
Americans
important
people. Are big on that. So you if you're in the front of the plane and you've paid for what they call, I swear to you this is true, even more space.
Yeah. In other words, any. It reads better than any space.
It says on the ticket. It says on the ticket, star. And then it goes, even more space.
So I'm like already, I don't sleep on planes and I'm totally exhausted. And I get on this plane and I'm sitting next to this lady. And she's from, her English isn't great. She's from an Asian country. And she's got two kids with her. And the one is like three and the other one is like less than one. And the three-year-old is literally lying across her having this mad tantrum. It's kicking me. It's trying to get out of her arms. And it is freaking out completely. But she's super awkward and super embarrassed about it. I'm like, I can't right now. I can't be kicked by a tiny human for 14 more hours. And then thankfully, she felt so embarrassed about it that she actually asked the air stewardesses if there was an open seat and put me next to two very, very friendly Trump supporters who were quiet and didn't kick, but did tell me why Trump was going to save America.
Make America great again.
So between a kicking child and Trump supporters.
They were very pleasant Trump supporters.
Okay.
Somebody says that economy class to Paris is less than 10,000 Rand. Business class is about 30K. But you are not allowed to buy two tickets for yourself. Okay, so I suppose each airline has different rules.
But why? But why? If I want to buy a BMW and never ever drive it, that's surely BMW like, listen, we're on to you. You're one of those people going to buy one of our cars and never drive the thing. Unfortunately, we can't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that also means there have been enough people who've tried to... You know, for the airline to have such a clause.
But 10 versus 30, three times the price. It's certainly not three times the space. Mm-mm. And damn sure not three times the joy of the glory cuisine. I mean, it's like, it's average to slightly...
It's not that great.
Wow.
Average versus crappy average.
Now, what about first class?
Now, I've only done that once. And it was magnificent, by comparison with the others.
Exactly.
You're still on a plane.
You're not in a lazy boy.
No.
I got upgraded once to first class as well, simply by virtue of being the last people to board a flight from France to South Africa, and there were no seats left, and they'd overbooked the plane, and they put me and my dad in first class. We were like, please let us on the plane. We're so sorry. We know boarding closed 10 minutes ago. And they were like, no, we'll figure it out. There's literally no more seats except for two in first class. Is that okay? We were like...
Is that okay? Yes. No, I demand,
my economy class seat where it's completely full.
Okay? I will rather sit in the aisle.
This will
you
go,
dare not
this
put
will
me in
go
first
viral,
class.
Damn you. No,
God
it was cool.
Like, do you know how many followers I have on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm in triple figures. There were literally like, this was literally like the mid-late 90s, so they're damn lucky there wasn't viral video. Yeah, at that
I'll tell you what, on Emirates, first class has a stand-up shower in the bathroom.
No way.
With heated floors.
Mm.
And the entrance to first class has a fountain in it. An actual fountain on the wall. With actual
the fountain.
Water. I don't know.
Because that could go horribly bad if there's turbulence.
So there are two staircases that come up onto a landing. And then the landing, you enter first class on either side of the bathrooms, right at the front of the
choir of children singing as you enter.
And someone to suck your dick as you go.
No.
Very good.
Because what says opulent more than that?
A fountain in a plane.
Somebody sucking what that is.
That's not opulence. I mean, that happens in a strip club.
That happens at stables in Nelspruit. You play your cards right.
All right. I want you to hear something quickly.
Oh, boy.
Andy Serkis, the guy who played Gollum in Lord of the Rings, was on... what show was this? I think it was The Late Show with... what's the guy's name? Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
And he reads out Trump's tweets in the Gollum voice.
Just before you play that, do you notice, like, for the benefit of the listeners, in order to do Gollum's voice, he has to jump onto his chair and get into the squat position.
Oh.
Like, he's like, oh, yeah, would you mind doing this impersonation for us? And he's like, oh, absolutely. And he gets in the physical position.
Okay, okay. Listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm terribly excited because my next guest is best known as Gollum, but he now stars in War for the Planet of the Apes. Please welcome my precious Andy Serkis.
He's very talented, this dude, huh? Incredible performer. I haven't watched any of these shows in ages.
It's fantastic to see you again.
You know,
that's his real voice.
One of the things that I always say to people who say, like, oh, Andy Serkis is this amazing motion capture performer, I go, no, he's a fantastic performer who is famous for doing motion capture, because people, even to this day, don't necessarily understand that that's you all the time doing that performance. And the magic of motion capture is they're able to make your performance into an ape, or into a shriveled hobbit or something like that. How many different non-human have you done?
Well, let me think now. I mean, the weird thing was like when we finished Lord of the Rings, I just thought I'm going to go back to my career as a normal actor, you know, actor doing stage and film and TV. And then Peter Jackson said, do you want to play King Kong? I thought, man, you know, I'm going to go from a 3.5-foot ring junkie to a 25-foot gorilla, you know. This is the end of typecasting as we know it. You know, this is it. This is it. You can play anything. Anyone can play anything. So that was...
Seven years ago, my boys and I luckily went down to New Zealand.
I remember.
And were invited by Peter to come down to the set for The Hobbit. And on the way there...
It's got to be good to be one of these guys, huh? You get Peter Jackson to show you around the set while they're making the movie just because you're on television.
Mm.
That's got to be the best.
Because you're all chums.
And the rest of us, if we're lucky, we get shown around that bullshit set they built 20 years ago for Lord of the Rings. And, you know, oh, that used to be a hobbit house and the grass is overgrown. And there's some New Zealander there in an outfit pretending to be part of the cast, but they weren't even born when it was made. And this guy gets to see the actual movie being made.
Sounds bizarrely specific. Like, it's weirdly detailed, your description.
No. I'm saying that's probably what they do to ordinary tourists like us.
We had a layover on L.A. and we saw the original The Planet of the Apes movie that we did with Mr. Franco. And my boys absolutely loved it. It was a brilliant performance. And they said, I wonder how much of that is Mr. Serkis and how much of that is the motion capture. And I said, well, when we get to New Zealand, we'll ask. And we went to Stone Street Studios, you know, the Weta people, I guess.
Yeah.
And they actually peeled back your performance for us in one of the best scenes of the movie. And we saw it's all you. And we have a wonderful clip that I think your people sent along of Caesar in the new movie giving a speech.
By the way, that Planet of the Apes freaked me out completely.
I haven't watched any of the new ones.
No, I haven't seen this very latest one.
Because it's the third, right? Yeah, in the reboot.
But I watched that first one and the second one, and I have to tell you, there are very few things that... Like, it's scary.
Mm.
You know, they make these apes so realistic, and they're so clever. And the fact that humans and apes would be on an equal footing intellectually, it jars. You know, I know what evolution is. I've studied it, and I've tried to understand how species develop and how they develop special characteristics and survival of the fittest and all that kind of thing. When you see this stuff, and I know people who can't watch that movie, it freaks them out completely.
The movie also just reminds you just how shitty human beings can be.
Oh, big time.
Like, it really highlights all our flaws in the best way.
Big time.
Okay, so like, just a quick refresher, because I know the premise is like, apes get clever, humans and apes, now they have a battle, and apes kick the shit out of humans, basically.
Sometimes it's a bit equal. Sometimes the humans win, sometimes the apes win.
Okay,
depends which movie you're watching.
So there's now that this is now the third one. The first one was there was Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I don't remember, dude. You're confusing me. I just know they're apes and they're humans
to begin with.
All right, here, let's get back to Andy Serkis because we've got to get to news. But here's the time, the moment where he reads the Trump tweets as Gollum. Okay, such a, listen to this. So he gets onto the chair.
The fake news media has never been so wrong or so dirty. Purposely incorrect stories and phony sources to meet their agenda of hate. Sad.
Wow.
Beautifully done.
And rehearsed as well.
Despite the constant negative press kerfuffle. Wait, what's kerfuffle, precious?
No one knows. That's the most brilliant. Beautiful thing.
Isn't that fantastic?
And it looked as if they took him. It looked as if they kind of sprung it on him. It looked as if it wasn't rehearsed.
I don't think it was. He's that good.
Yeah, he's very good.
All righty, it is time for us to check in on the news. Yesterday, while we were talking about all the news stories and all the rest, Gord told me he goes to Colcacchio's all the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True story.
Explain why.
Well, you know, I'm a person that's always kind of trying to diet. I'm either failing or succeeding at dieting, but when I'm dieting, it's always a bit of a pain in the ass when you want to take your friends somewhere, but there's not a lot of options that are healthy, and you don't want to inflict that on them. So I love to go to Colcacchio's because their custom salad building experience lets me create my own salad, and I've got like a specific one that I always make, and it's brilliant. And then those people who either don't mind eating ordinary food that's delicious, or you know, want
all the carb stuff that you don't want to avoid.
Who are not concerned about the specifics, they can get like delicious stuff like pizza and pasta and indulgent stuff, or they can also have a really nice salad. So it literally is my go-to place when I need to get a bunch of people together and everybody can have something they like. So yeah, it's a really cool
very
option.
Nice. Well, there's another endorsement that we didn't pay him for.
Totally.
From Gord Laws, and it's 6:30, which means the news brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Here's Mabale Moloi.
Okay, I'm going to begin with a couple of parliamentary questions that have been posed to certain ministers.
All right.
That have also now been responded. We'll begin with the...
Are you stroking your cock?
No, not now.
Sorry, I thought that was the question.
Oh, no. No. Different kind of Q&A. This is parliament.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. We'll begin with the DA, who posed a question to the Transport Minister, Joe Masangwani, about just how much money has been spent for printing and posting of e-toll invoices? Would anybody like to take a guess?
Oh, it must be millions.
More than has been paid by motorists.
Yes, God.
Tell us, give us the number. Let's brace yourself, everybody. This is how much money has been absolutely wasted. And
full
how many,
color, mind you. How many, full color invoices.
And how many trees have been killed for a pointless, stupid, dead exercise like e-tolls.
The South African National Roads Agency Limited, also known as SANRAL, has forked out.
Wait. Go.
327 million rand.
What?
Oh my
for
God.
Printing and posting invoices for the e-toll system since its launch back in December 2013. So that's over a 4-year period.
It's a third of a billion South African rands.
Oh my gosh, when you put it like that.
A third of a billion ZARs.
Okay.
Yeah.
The transport minister's response to the question that was posed shows that two foreign companies have earned more than 550 million rand for providing e-tags as well as printing and posting invoices over the past 3.5 years. Sweden's Kapsch Trafikcom AB won the tender for the e-toll system in Gauteng 2010. The transport minister said it was paid 167 million rand for the provision and maintenance of e-tags. And then Norway's Q-Free ASA got 58 million rand for doing the same thing. The cost of printing and posting of invoices for the period from December 2010, when e-tolls were launched, up until May last year, came to a total of 327 million.
Shame. Shame.
Do they say there, like, what the profit loss with all the staff? Because there's people at those gantries. That's what you can go get a day pass. I've heard.
There are actually people. There are people who sit in those e-toll. You know, they've got them in the shopping malls.
Yeah. And they've got them on the side of the freeway. Yeah, you can go and update your e-tag at a shopping mall. The person who has literally the least fulfilling job in history.
I don't think I have ever walked into anything e-toll related. I know that they still have their like in some shopping centers you have the office that you can walk into.
Yeah, that's it.
So I've got a family member who's smart. I've got quite a few who's smart. I won't mention who he is, but he's smart and he's successful. And he said to me with this stuff, I've got a problem, and it's a long boring story, but the people who know that I have a TV license and that I need to pay for it, and the people who you can pay are separate people. So I can't pay my TV license until after every few years the people who control chasing up debt come after me. I can't go to them and be like, hey guys, I'd like to renew. They're like, you don't exist. 4 years later, now you owe us penalty fees. This has been going on for 15 years. So anyway, my family member said to me, look, what you got to do now is once it gets handed over to lawyers, they are going to bill hourly for every time they phone you, every time they email you, and every time you successfully answer the phone.
Right.
They're going to bill.
It costs them money.
The company owned by an ANC member's nephew that have got the tender for being the lawyers, they're going to charge.
Yeah.
So pay your 3,000 rand in back fees. Once you are comfortable that it's cost more than 3,000 rand to get the money out of you. Now, similarly with e-tolls, I mean, I'll never pay it. They'll literally have to take the clothes off my dead body, sell them, and use that to pay my e-tolls. But I laugh hysterically every time I get this 4-page full-color printout of the City Golf. Disclaimer, I've never owned a City Golf.
Yes.
With my old number plates from before I moved to Cape Town and changed my plates. My old Joburg plates on my black VW Polo. Now someone has put on a white City Golf. And I just laugh hysterically. I'm like, if you went down to Jetline, this is about 7 rants worth, and they want 15 rant because this dude went through a gantry in a place I've never been to. So you just can have a little bit of satisfaction that, like, I mean, obviously the squandering of the money, ultimately it's everyone's money being squandered, and that's tragic. But still, it's like, okay, guys.
I'll make sure that it's worth whatever you're going to bill me then in your time so that they don't make a profit
exactly.
out of it. Okay. And they don't see this because they're not good at maths. They did Angie Mocheha maths. So, okay.
Okay, so we're done with the transport minister responding to the DA's questions.
It was, give me more.
I'm not giving you a damn thing. Then it was the turn of the Home Affairs Minister to respond to a question that was posed by the EFF's MP, Hlengiwe Hlophe, who simply wanted to know whether or not the Gupta family have renounced their Indian citizenship. Home Affairs Minister Hlengiwe Mkhize told Parliament that members of the Gupta family have submitted proof that they have renounced their Indian citizenship. Gareth, please give us synonyms for renounce.
Abdicate.
Oh.
Don't know.
Decry.
Yeah,
abandon.
Abandon is good.
Okay. So apparently this is because India does not allow for dual citizenship.
So in other words, if we throw them out, they don't have a place to live. Is that kind of how it works?
Money will get you a passport, dude.
I mean, the way that I understand this is that the Guptas are not going anywhere anytime soon, is how I understand it.
Maybe they can't. Maybe they are. They genuinely, let's say they can't bribe other countries like they can in South Africa.
Yeah, let's assume that. That's a safe assumption.
Because actually, we're probably the most bribable bunch of people.
There may be one or two contenders, but we're way above average.
Yeah. Okay, so in bribery terms, we're right up there.
We'd be in the middles, yeah.
Yeah. So unless they can find some terrible, terrible country who will do anything for a couple of bucks, and there are some of those too, we are pretty much what they've got. And if we chuck them out, or if we revoke their citizenship, they'd be screwed. They wouldn't belong anywhere. They'd have to go and colonize an island or something.
They'd have to go take a whole lot of money and put it in the ocean until it's higher than sea level and go live on that. But I think in terms of the stealable resources to bribability ratio, we probably like head and shoulders above. There'll be more bribable countries, but with nothing to steal or less to steal. So we like gold, and we're a unicorn of bribability and resources.
But remember last month there was that controversy when it emerged that the application for naturalization, which had originally been declined, was then accepted by the then Home Affairs Minister, Malusi Gigaba.
He expedited it, yeah.
So if he expedited that application and now we're finding out that their Indian citizenship has been renounced, it sounds to me like they're here to stay. They're here to stay.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much, hey, neighbors. It's great. All right, what else do we need to know?
It would seem that there is now a fight that has broken out between the co-founder of Bell Pottinger and its CEO.
Gosh.
Now, Bell Pottinger's CEO is James Henderson. The co-founder is Lord Bell. And Lord Bell has recently given an interview to PR Week, which is a PR magazine, where he basically says that he left the company back in 2015. And part of the reason why he left was because he warned the firm that them taking on the Guptas as clients was, quote, smelly, end quote.
Oh.
So Lord Bell is now speaking out and saying, actually, I warned the company that this was like taking on these clients would not be a good business move. I thought it looked suspicious. It was smelly, his words. And now the CEO, James Henderson, has hit back saying, no. James Henderson said that he disagrees with Lord Bell's view regarding the company taking on the Guptas as clients. This follows an earlier report in PR Weekly where the co-founder of Bell Pottinger told the PR magazine that the firm ignored his warning not to take on the Guptas. Now, Bell Pottinger has been accused of stoking racial tensions, of course, in South Africa. And Lord Bell left the company last year and he told the magazine that, yeah, well, that was one of the reasons why I left. He slammed Henderson's statement that he was misled by their lead manager, Victoria. That's it. Who was dismissed last week.
Yeah.
Lord Bell said, well, he is the chief executive, for God's sake. It's his job to know what is going on in that company.
I'm curious to know, and most maybe you can fill us in. What other high-profile clients do these dudes have? Are any of them fundamentally evil?
Yeah, well, a lot of them. They've been involved in regime change. And what?
I don't know. Nothing. I just heard something. I heard, and I don't know if it's true.
Well,
about a certain.
When
about,
you say about, allegedly, do they work in the clear.
For, do about, they work for the guy from Mordor in Lord of the Rings. What was his name?
Saruman.
Lord Sauron.
Anyway, do they have any other dodgy clients?
Well, there was a report, an expose that surfaced back in 2016, Gord, where it was revealed that the US government had paid Bell Pottinger hundreds of millions of rand.
Really?
In for them to kind of create Al-Qaeda propaganda, if you will.
Hmm.
So that's at least one client that we know of, according to the expose that was revealed last year.
This is like some Olivia Pope the Fixer shit. Dude. Like, what is going on in there?
Listen, if we had to go into the Bell Pottinger house today and just lift those carpets, shift the beds and see what's underneath, I'm pretty sure we'd all be shocked and horrified at the kind of work that they have done.
Because if this Lord Bell is being honest, then he's going to be one of our favorite people for actually speaking out. But that Victoria raises a good question. How does someone in your position not know what's going
on? I mean, come on, you know. Of course
you know, they're just spinning things. I mean, they do PR.
I know that every client we've ever had on cliffcentral.com, there's no way I wouldn't know that. And I know their business, and it's important to know that. Otherwise, how the hell are we going to do what we do for them?
But even if you have 200 clients, even though you might not know what's specifically going on, you know, you have a vague idea.
This broadcast is brought to you by Deathco Fracking and Oil Extraction on cliffcentral.com.
I'd be for a cleaner
coal powered future.
Dirtier.
Don't do electric.
All right, well, I mean, this Bell Pottinger thing is just, first of all, what a horrible name, Bell Pottinger.
Well, Lord Bell.
Lord Bell.
But the Pottinger.
But it's satisfying to say. It's just lovely when it comes out of your Bell Pottinger.
What kind of a lavatory did you just buy, Alexandra? I bought a Bell Pottinger.
Armitage Shanks, Gareth, that's yesterday's business. You need a Bell Pottinger. I also want to know about this vibe, right? So, like, it's such an act of dickheadry. If you're a lord, like, just enjoy the fact that you're a lord and, like, you've got lands and servants and livestock and there's an elderly Scottish man, and when you arrive, he's like, he's home. And, like, you just gallop in on your dressage horse. Yes. You don't need everyone to call you lord. It's like, you're a lord. You just enjoy being wealthy on ancient money that you didn't have to make.
Yeah, but maybe he was made a lord.
That's Lord Laws to you, Gareth.
Maybe he was made a lord after he founded all these companies. That's what happened.
Lord.
I'm trying to research how he actually got the title, because this is actually...
Do we still seriously have lords?
Yes, we do.
I would want that. I've always wanted sire.
But, okay, but in 20...
Don't laugh. Sire. Exactly.
In 2017, though, what perks come with being a lord?
Money.
No, it doesn't. You don't get money.
You must have it hereditarily.
No. There's a duke, which is the highest rank in the peerage in Britain. A duke who lives in a garage.
So you can be a... They don't revoke you once you get...
His ancestors were the most glorious people in Britain, and he lives in a garage.
Still cool to be a duke. So Duke Trump's lord, because for me, being called your dukeness.
No, it's not your... A duke is called your grace. At the coronation of the queen or the next king, the duke wears a coronet of strawberry leaves.
That's all?
Of course. I mean,
gold strawberry leaves. They have a train of no less than, I think it's 2.5 meters of... velvet, red velvet, and ermine, with 5 bars.
What is ermine?
Ermine is a kind of... it's a stoat, basically. It's a small animal. It's a small animal.
I even like the fact that
like a rabbity mouse.
Okay, yeah. No. An ermine is a small animal from which they take just the tail.
By the way, a rabbity mouse sounds frightening, because that would be a huge mouse.
That's pretty much what a claw and a little... please continue describing what you have to wear as a duke at an inauguration of a king or queen, because this is beauty. You're making this shit up.
No, I promise you it's true. So a duke is the highest level in the peerage, followed by a marquis.
A marquis.
Oh, so that was a marquis. No, a tent.
In France, they call them the marquis, but in Britain, it's a marquis. And a duke's wife is a duchess, obviously. Mm-hmm. A marquis's wife is a marchioness. Mm-hmm. Then you get an earl.
Mm-hmm.
And an earl's wife is a countess.
Oh, countess.
Julia Count's wife is a countess.
No. A count is a European term. In England, they use earl, which comes from Scandinavia.
Jarl.
Jarl, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And from Old English. And then you get a viscount, and his wife is a viscountess. Mm-hmm. Then you get a baron, and then you get a baroness. And a lord, a lord is basically a baron or a viscount.
So a baron is above a king.
So let's say your Gord Laws, Duke of Cliff Central.
So I
call you Your Grace.
You've jawed baroness now. It's like six levels down, and you still haven't got to lord. So lords are actually quite shitty.
Yeah, lords are entry level.
Very poor.
Oh, no. Then we want to bump the cheese up.
A baron or a baroness is a lord or a lady, essentially.
Okay. So now if you're Your Grace, you need the strawberry head thing with gold.
No, it's a coronet. It's a crown.
But it's gold, and it's designed to look like strawberries, or is it strawberries painted with gold?
No, it's golden.
And then you've got
a depiction of a strawberry leaf.
And you've got a 2-meter cloak made out of the tails of stoats.
No, you've basically got a red velvet cloak, and then those. You know when you see a crown, and it's got that little band of white fur at the bottom,
yes,
and it's got those little streaks of black in it.
Yes,
that's ermine.
Is that real?
And ermine is stoat tail.
Not stoat, it's an ermine. It's called an ermine.
The animal's an ermine.
It's an animal, yeah.
So even though that guy lives in a garage,
them,
where do stoats come into? Do you mention stoats?
Ermine is related to
a stoat. Stoat-like
guys,
we've
got to finish this. This is getting ridiculous.
I still have so many questions.
It's getting ridiculous now.
No. Yeah.
Only now it began.
You didn't know this stuff?
Yeah. No.
Because we all just know stoats and ermines.
I'm never going to forget the little black fluffy bits in the white fur of the crowd is.
This is how we win Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That's the one question.
Yeah. Your call a friend is Gareth. I'll call a friend. Thank you.
Let's get to Anthea, all right? It's time for the money shot. Come on, let's move.
She looks up from morning.
Yeah.
So hard for an owner.
Good morning, Anthea. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. I'm well, thanks. We had a decent day yesterday.
I saw that. I had to look at my screen 3 times. I couldn't believe our luck.
Yeah, everything just seemed to work yesterday.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, the Rand firmed to 13.21 against the greenback. This time, I think, though not because of a stronger Rand, but rather the dollar weakness. Long may the story of Trump's Russian ties last.
Right.
Actually, I'm probably being a bit unfair to him, though. Janet Yellen did speak yesterday. She's the chair of the U.S. Federal Reserve in charge of raising or not interest rates. And basically, in a nutshell, she was saying that the U.S. won't have to raise interest rates too much more to get to a neutral position. So, of course, everyone's kind of thinking now that they won't raise interest rates as much as they had previously said. And while we're talking about interest rates, our Monetary Policy Committee members have pretty much gone into lockdown, I think, as we've got the MPC meeting next week, and then they'll tell us their decision on our interest rates. They're probably looking at all the data right now, trying to decide what to do. But there is a lot of talk in the market that the Reserve Bank could cut interest rates next week. It certainly won't hurt us as consumers. Inflation now comfortably below 6%. The economy going into recession is probably a good reason to cut interest rates as well. The thing, though, is if they do cut interest rates, then I think we need to be aware that this may result in a currency weakening as the carry trade evaporates. And just let me explain the carry trade very quickly because it ties in with the U.S. A carry trade is when you can borrow money at a low interest rate and invest it in another asset somewhere else that could result in a higher return. For example, in the U.S., interest rates are currently at 1%. So if you borrowed money at 1% in the U.S., then invested in South African 10-year government bonds, which are yielding closer to 9%, you get the 8% yield pickup. It's like an arbitrage. But of course, of course, that 8% is dependent on the South African currency not weakening so that it, the yield pickup doesn't disappear. And if the US are raising interest rates and we are lowering our interest rates, then that differential disappears, basically. And that's okay. The carry trade.
Okay. Well, you know, every now and then you bring in some complicated term and we have to learn what it means. I may have to listen to this again in the podcast.
Okay, but...
It's not that you didn't explain it well, it's that I'm stupid.
Okay, I'll go with that. I'm just kidding. Okay, right. More macro news. Consumer Confidence Index was released yesterday. It went from -5 in the first quarter of the year to -9 in the second quarter. I mean, I guess it's no surprise, right? Even though inflation has come down, I think consumers are still very much feeling the pressure. I think... So food inflation went from, 16 last year to kind of 11 or around about 10 now in the most recent inflation number. So the basics that consumers are having to purchase are still expensive, right?
Gotcha.
And then, of course, you add to that weak income growth, higher taxes, rising unemployment, very little credit extension. And then actually the real purchasing power of the consumer actually decreases, even though, you know, inflation is so low. And so I guess there's no surprise that this consumer confidence number is now -9. Makes for a very sad consumer, doesn't it?
I'm a sad consumer because I can't go in and buy anything anymore. My rand is not worth what it was last year.
Absolutely. I totally get that. But as we were saying early on, despite the stronger rand, the all-share index ended the day 1% higher. The resource index was flat. I mean, commodity prices are on the uptick at the moment, global commodity prices I'm talking about. But then our industrials and our financials made a really nice, strong comeback. Naspers back on track. It's above 2,600 rand. I feel like I've been holding my breath on the share. and at least now it's moving in the right direction. So one less thing for me to worry about. And of course, but because of the stronger rand, financials were much stronger, generally speaking. And then my screen is pretty much green across the board this morning, which is nice for a change.
That's very good. Let's see if we can make that sustain at least until the end of this week, maybe even a little bit further.
Oh, that would be lovely. We really need a little bounce, don't we?
Damn right. All right.
And then that's all. I mean, there are no companies reporting at the moment, so.
That's good enough for me.
Super. I'm happy. Thanks, Gareth. Have a good day.
Thank you, Anthea. There we go, Anthea Gardner. And a look at your money this morning. It's Thursday, which means Justice Malala is in next with The Burning Platform. Don't forget, we're going to be playing our Game of Thrones Death Pool later on, which is going to be exceptional. It basically works like this. There are about, 15 or so characters?
Primary characters.
Primary characters in the show that are left. And we're all going to dip into the hat. We're going to also select for Ben. And whoever at the end of this season of Game of Thrones has the most living characters, that person gets the $100. We all have to put $100 in.
Oh.
It's very exciting. So all of that's coming up on cliffcentral.com. Next few minutes, it's 7:05. Burning Platform with Justice Malala, brought to you by Nando's next.
This is CliffCentral.com.